You're listening to The Top Line, brought to you by Fierce Pharma and Fierce Biotech. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. Today's episode is the second in a three-part series diving into the latest advancements in cell and gene therapy manufacturing. In the first part of this series, Fraser Kansteiner from Fierce Pharma sat down with Ori Biotech CEO Jason Foster and CEO Jason Bach of the Cell Therapy Manufacturing Center. Today, in the second part of the series, Fraser chats with experts from the blood industry and contract manufacturing space. Let's dive into the conversation now.
Hello, everyone. This is Fraser Kansteiner, staff writer for Fierce Pharma. As we continue our top line series around cell and gene therapy manufacturing, I'm excited to introduce another group of experts this week. Today, we're joined by Becky Butler-Kapp, Senior Vice President of Biotherapies at Vitalin, Kevin Kyle, CEO of Germ Free Laboratories, and Dalara Motlag, Head of Global Cell Therapy at Catalent. To start off, knowing that you all come from different areas in the cell and gene manufacturing landscape, I want to start by addressing a common refrain amongst the industry, that being that the process is the product. I want to get your perspective on whether that mantra still holds true and maybe just elaborate on why manufacturing is such a vital component of these advanced therapies.
Dalara, you had a great comment about this.
I can certainly jump in. I think the mantra has been around for a while, and I think it could probably use a bit of updating, but I think the intention behind it holds true, which is at the end of the day, you're developing a living therapy. And so the process is extremely important because it's not going to follow the same rules and principles of a small molecule or even a large molecule. The other piece is that there's a lot of inherent variability in the cells, which are the star of the show for these therapies. And I think most critically, when it comes to the commercialization elements, the IP is tied to the process. And so there's such criticality in the know-how and then the specific way that these cells are modified in order to have their therapeutic benefit. So I think that's the intention behind. And maybe the phrase could use a little modernizing, given some of the advancements we've made.
And I just loved that when you said it, because I heard that phrase and part of me cringed because I'm like, well, yes, but not quite. And we've learned so much about the cells and models from other industries. And I'm coming from the blood banking side of things where the process is consistent, but there's so much about what's going on with the specific cells that you need to pay attention to as you implement that process. And so we see places where we've allowed for wider guard bands on certain parts of the process, written them less narrowly, and that has been really, really powerful. So I think that's something that we can take to the cell and gene space.
I think I'm quite aligned with both of you on that. I mean, the statement has been somewhat true up to now, but where we're going in the future is that the product does have to be the product. I think that regulatory will require it. I think that just overall quality will require that. But I think that standardization of the processes and improved analytics, quality management, and parametric release are going to drive this in the future. We're moving down the right path.
Great. Thank you. I'll retire that phrase from my vocabulary. We've witnessed plenty of examples of production hangups around cell and gene therapies in recent years. So from your perspectives and perhaps leveraging the unique perspectives of your companies and your different roles, what are some of the major manufacturing hurdles or limiting factors that have historically made it difficult to establish wide and easy access to these drugs?
I can start. I can think of three, and I think it hits all of us here. The first is there's a lot of inherent variability in the starting material, whether it's an autologous cell product or an allogeneic. Right? Our cells are as unique as all of us. And then on top of it, you layer in different protocols and the way that they're handled and managed. So there's that inherent variability. I think that's one issue and challenge that the manufacturing process has to address. The second is that when the development is happening for these therapies, a lot of that work is done with normal donor material. And so by the time you get into whatever indication that you're going after, now the patient material is going to be different. And it doesn't necessarily match the parameters in the process that you've established. And so that, I think, is another challenge for manufacturing. And finally, a lot of these processes and how we're doing the manufacturing came from academic processes that we're trying to scale, right? So you have a lot of manual steps and processing and ways of working that are great in a GLP environment, in an academic environment. But when you try to scale them, this is where you really start to test the parameters of your process. So I think these are three challenges that continue to plague us today as far as the manufacturing.
I'm going to riff on that with the open systems, closed systems, and clean room processing. I eventually see us getting to a place where we are doing closed system manufacturing in a controlled, not classified space. We're not there yet. Some of that is regulatory belts and suspenders, where we have a closed system in a clean room just in case. But as some of the technology develops, we're going to see it move that direction. The challenge is getting licensed product manufacturing that has been licensed under a manufacturing process that requires open systems to then be, how do we translate that into this controlled, not classified space?
It's definitely that translation from academic research into cGMP production is a major challenge for us. I also believe that there's a disconnect between the patient need and the manufacturing that's necessary to serve those patients. I mean, just the vein-to-vein nature of the therapies ultimately requires manufacturing that is closer to patients. And I don't know if that's bedside, hospital adjacent, county adjacent, state adjacent, but there's got to be closer adjacencies. We've all heard about the issues in efficacy between fresh versus frozen cells. There are logistics around those matters. So there are a lot of, I'll call them technical complexities that come into play here that are adding to the variability up until now. And ultimately, it's our job as leaders in industry to reduce the time and the process risk associated with all of this.
Excellent. Now, before we start going into each of your individual companies, I want to ask broadly, what are some of the more promising cell and gene manufacturing innovations or approaches that you've observed as of late? And I think I know the answer to this next one, but do we need a variety of approaches, or is there more of a one-size-fits-all solution that maybe the industry has yet to capitalize on?
I think eventually we will get to one-size-fits-a-category, a type of product, but not one-size-fits-all. And I think just given where each of us is coming from, we have to find a way to match up an expansion of the healthcare system capacity with an expansion of the manufacturing, I'll call it manufacturing footprint, however you define that.
That's an excellent point, Becky. And when you think broadly about not just the tools, but the whole ecosystem, the way that I look at it and some of the innovations is one, I mean, you're seeing a lot of entrants coming into the space that are alleviating some of the bottlenecks, for example, that we see in collection. People who really know how to do this, you know, or are accustomed to managing donors or managing sicker patient populations and managing the blood products and doing this such that it takes some of that burden off the hospital. I think that's one way that folks are coming into this space to innovate and to help that obviously has a huge impact in manufacturing. Another is the automation and the tools. That there's lots of really smart people, lots of great engineers that are developing lots of great technologies, not just for the manufacturing, but also for the analytics, because they have to go hand in hand. And while we continue to automate, that there is still a specialized workforce needed. And that's another area that I feel like doesn't get enough attention. Because anytime you look at any organization, whether it's a contract manufacturing organization or a biotech or anywhere in between, you need a workforce that is really accustomed to working with cells and in a GMP environment and all the nuances that go in there. So the workforce planning and agencies like Alliance for Regenerative Medicine, ISCT, Cell and Gene Therapy Catapult. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are leaning in to help develop a curriculum that will allow for the training of the next generation of workforce so that burden doesn't just lie with one organization. So I think these are ways, if we just think a bit more broadly, because our whole sector needs help, not just specific unit operations within a manufacturing process.
I highly doubt there will be a one size fits all, but there will probably be a best practices per modality type of approach. That's how I see it. And I also think there are a lot of promising avenues and technologies. I think whether you're talking about quality management systems or manufacturing enterprise systems, in how we support that next level of workforce to come in and do the processing and based quite parametrically on what type of donor material, the conditions of the donor material, and the conditions of the process on a given day. So I see a lot of hope, and there are a lot of great minds that are working on this cross modalities today. And that makes me very happy. I love innovation and I love to be a part of it. I mean, I think when we look at folks like Cellular Origins as an example, they're increasing the automation, which will help us both on the workforce front in being able to standardize, but it's also a quality matter. It's an efficiencies matter. It's a closed systems and reducing risk matter. So I think that's very promising. And I'll even go as far as Walgreens' announcement delivering through their specialty pharmacy division. That's innovation on a whole different avenue, if you will, maybe a whole different superhighway that we've got to be, you know, mindful of and supportive of. My opinion is that innovation across all of the pieces of this puzzle is going to be a great driver for the industry. And the future 10 years from now is going to look a lot different than today.
Excellent. So I now want to move into the specific work that your companies are doing on this front. Let's start with one of the initial steps, collection with Vitalin, which is the biggest blood center in the U.S. and recently entered cell and gene manufacturing. So Becky, can you maybe just walk me through the role of the blood industry and the development and manufacturing of these therapies? Admittedly, it's an area I think I've somewhat neglected in my coverage.
Let me open up some opportunities for you to expand that coverage, Fraser, because I think the blood industry has a blood banking industry has a really interesting role to play here. We have collection centers as a network across the entire U.S. footprint, everywhere that medical care requires blood, which is pretty much everywhere. So we're both nationwide and deeply embedded within communities. There's a deep understanding of the clinical urgency around that would apply to some of these cell and gene products dealing with trauma cases, blood and blood utilization, and having been part of the bone marrow transplant world and network for the entirety of that whole segment's existence. There's a deep level of engagement with the product. There's a deep level of engagement with the hospitals. And so being connected to that clinical component when you're doing manufacturing and processing. I alluded to controlled, not classified space. And if you look at the blood components manufacturing processes, whether you're dealing with red cells, plasma, cryoprecipitate, any of those products right now, those are manufactured in a controlled, not classified space. You have unidirectional flow. I just walked through our production lab here in Chicago, and it was beautiful unidirectional flow. I'm like, wow, that's just really nice. So I think you can see things, elements that will translate to where the industry's going. But you have a collections network that's more on the allogeneic side, collections network that is very healthy and robust. The thing that I was really excited about when I joined Vitalant in January was that we as an organization have a strong clinical connection. We're in the hospitals. And so we are doing collections on patients in those hospital spaces and then able to take those products, those collected products, and process them in our labs, preparing them for further manufacture today.
Becky, could you touch on the considerations that cell and gene developers and companies like Vitalant need to make when it comes to the quality and quantity of these cells?
Well, I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, just with the timing of the collections and the from the time from collection to processing or further manufacture. And I think that's something that a decentralized model can really support, because we have that broad base of collection footprint where we can get product and then quickly move it to a processing setting. The other thing I was thinking about was, as we were talking about the manufacturing process being the product, sometimes if you're collecting to a certain cell count standard, you may need to use some judgment around how many liters of patient blood you process, or how long you leave something in a specific state. The staff in a blood center is accustomed to working with those kinds of parameters and that kind of flexibility in a process to support a clinical outcome. And so somehow being able to bridge that is really, I think, a superpower of the blood centers.
Becky, could you also maybe speak to the ethical component of the collection field? Are there any controversies that companies ought to consider or be aware of?
First of all, I do want to say, when I started out in this space about 8 years ago, there were a lot of concerns about the consent process. And are we doing enough to make sure that donors and patients know what they're consenting to? And that goes back to all kinds of cases, Henrietta Lacks, because a lot of blood banks are involved in tissue recovery as well. So back to that controversy, other medical controversies, let's just call it that. But I have been very impressed with how companies have really focused on developing those informed consents to be as broad as necessary and as clear and as mindful of the donor's rights and interests in the process. So on the donor side, I'm feeling pretty good about where we are. So I guess that captures a bit of the things that I think are important for the industry to consider. On the patient side, I think we still have, with unregulated stem cell clinics, all of our conversation really is defaulting to immune effector cell therapies, and we've got licensed therapies and we're moving forward. But there are unregulated stem cell clinics, and you have a big controversy continuing to develop between people who feel like that is an area of care that should be accessible to everyone, and those who feel very strongly that should be licensed and regulated to protect patients who may be suffering and just desperate for another option.
Great. Thank you so much, Becky. So I now want to move on to Catalent, obviously a huge force when it comes to contract manufacturing for these therapies. So Dallara, can you maybe just start by running us through Catalent's CAR-T platform, you know, how it helps developers address potential process challenges, and if you could maybe speak to why it's important that developers lock in process early in the development cycle.
One question we often get is, why CAR-T? And maybe not to folks that are in the industry, but adjacent. And while there's a lot of advancement happening in cell and gene therapy, CAR-T therapies are still the dominant player. Over 50% of the clinical trials are still leveraging CAR-T. But as a process, there's a lot of learnings there that can be more broadly applied as well. As far as why we developed this platform and what kind of a need it's meeting, the objective was really pretty simple, right? Helping those developers that are developing autologous and allogeneic therapies to be able to lock their process earlier in development, to allow them to be able to move more quickly and to have process reproducibility. So these are really key. They're fundamental. And so what our CAR-T platform allows is one, standardization of the process to make it more reproducible. Two, we have generated data on best of class technology. So it's not being married to one specific, but a myriad of them. And we're generating that data. So it gives our clients a starting point. So they're not starting from scratch as they evaluate different technologies and making decisions of what's going to work best in their process. It also allows them to transfer their process more quickly. They have flexibility. That's another big element. And that flexibility allows them to choose technologies that fit their process, but they do so in a data-driven manner, not just of what's available or what is in the clean room that they can use, but rather what's going to fit their process, what are they trying to achieve, and having a jump start on it. And our platform goes hand in hand with the data analytics. So we've established a panel of analytical tools and ways of looking at your process that allow you to be able to then make those data-driven decisions. And then ultimately, speed is the name of the game in many cases for cell and gene. I mean, folks are always trying to get into clinic more quickly, not only because of the patients waiting for these life-saving therapies, there's also investors that are waiting for them to generate data to show that they have the right product in order to be able to move forward. So that's what the platform offers. That's why we went with CAR-T. So establishing your locking your process early is really important. One, it allows you to have much more meaningful conversations with regulators when you're trying to talk about how your process is going to, in a very consistent manner, be able to produce a product and a therapy. But it also allows you during your development to be able to establish your critical process parameters in your defined process and then marry them against your critical quality attributes. And this is really key in showing that you have a defined process, but also, again, as you're engaging regulatory agencies. And the final piece is comparability. This is something that strikes fear in the heart of many developers, being able to show that they have a comparable product, whether it's time and time again when they're manufacturing or when they need to make a shift or a move of their process from one location to another, or as is the case with many, needing to not only manufacture in one location, but in multiple locations. So being able to lock your process, having these parameters established, allows you to have that comparability that you can demonstrate. And then, of course, if there's changes you need to make to your process, that becomes really important as well.
Can you just talk a bit about how Catalent helps companies with that scale up, whether it's into clinical trials or potentially onto the market?
So one of the things that we really do to help is helping to have that science meet engineering. So you have a really innovative process. Now, how are you going to scale it? This is where process engineering comes in, process development, as well as your AMPSAT groups to help really be able to scale in an efficient and reproducible manner. Our CAR-T platform was also designed to meet this need. So at Catalent, when we have clients that are using this platform to transfer their process, it allows them to be able to not only lock their process, but to be able to transfer it more quickly.
Fantastic. And final one for you, if you could just touch on the potential of automation in cell therapy production. We've already touched on that a little bit, but I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
Automation is going to do many things. One, some of that inherent variability of just those manual manipulations goes away. So Becky might be better at managing the cells than I am. And so when you automate that step of the process, you take out that variable. And it also removes some of the open steps. So now you have not only more reproducible, less touch points, less risk of contamination, but it also allows you to be able to potentially be in a different classification of room. So the ways that we automate, I think, are going to be really important, and really thinking about how can we standardize some of these key steps through automation are going to be really important in how we look at what steps we may automate first, and then ultimately what it means for the process overall.
Lastly, I'd like to get into GermFree, which recently acquired assets from Morgenesis in a bid to spread its decentralized manufacturing vision. So Kevin, can you maybe touch on that recent deal? What attracted your company to Orgenesis' work, and what are some of the overarching goals of that partnership?
Yeah, absolutely, Fraser. Orgenesis is a pioneer of the decentralized manufacturing model, and they're a fantastic and passionate team with great technologies that they've developed over some time. And we're confident that bringing together the best of Orgenesis's therapeutic program with GermFree's expertise in global deployment of high-tech manufacturing infrastructure is a winning combo. We're really enjoying the work with their team so far, finding great traction in the marketplace. And I think that's part of the technology stack that is going to allow further automation of processes and further controls of both quality, but also throughput going into the future. And then overall, I'd say GermFree is focused on partnering with therapeutic companies to enable patient access through decentralized manufacturing. we're definitely on the move and trying to make an impact here.
This decentralized approach is pretty different from some of the other companies that I've spoken to recently. Why is this approach beneficial to cell and gene therapy specifically? And how does it differ from, I guess, the historical production approach companies have used?
Very simply put, Fraser, we believe in this. We think it's part of the future of delivery for the ATMPs. And it's aligned very much with the experiences that we've compiled over the last 15, 20 years. We've done over 110 clean room deployments. We have 200 facilities installed globally. Most of these act as very small manufacturing centers, whether it be for pharmaceutical production or for compounding in the hospital pharmacies, or whether it be for disease surveillance and research. So this is very much in our wheelhouse. We've seen this work extremely well globally, and we see it as a big part of the future and a big part of our future.
Great. And then final one for you, Kevin. What effects do you think this approach could have on the wider industry? And do you expect more cell and gene players to adopt decentralized manufacturing going forward?
I think one of the big things that's been holding the industry back has been the regulatory framework or the understanding of the regulatory framework. That's evolved significantly around decentralized manufacturing in a very short time and across multiple agencies. So I wouldn't underestimate the impact that is having on how this is progressing and the rate at which it's progressing. And then the systems and technology. I mean, we talked a lot here about automation and the promise therein, but I think that it takes time for the science and the engineering to get synced up. I think Dilara had a really nice point on that earlier, where they're manufacturing some of the engineering technology with manufacturing, of course, layering over the quality management and the regulatory interaction. So bringing it all together, it is really quite a complex puzzle, but we're coming to the right level of maturity, and there's more work to be done, no question. But you can see this. I mean, Orgenesis has done this in about 10 countries so far. You look at companies like Caring Cross doing fantastic work, with Fiocruz down in Brazil and serving Latin America. So this decentralized is quite reality right now. It's just not scaled out yet, and maybe not so many people are aware. And I would say even on the small molecule side, we've been working with and watching very closely a company called On Demand Pharmaceuticals. They've dosed 10,000 patients since December 15th of last year, serving drug shortages, coming at it with novel technology, but delivering on what I would call strategic assets for the country and localizing manufacturing. So really important. We think it's early days in the delivery of ATMPs in this manner, and the time's now and the future's bright.
There's an element of maturity in the market where, as therapeutic developers and as a healthcare system, we have to develop a muscle memory around how to do this, what the science is, what the technical aspects are, what the clinical implications are when you deliver this therapy. Now it needs to expand outside that very controlled environment into a more routine environment. So we have elements of the infrastructure in place or almost in place to make that happen. And I think to your point about the time is right, I think this is the right time because there is enough experience now that people are like, okay, now the issue is getting it to all the patients, more than that 34,000 in 7 years. That's not quite that's not the treatment volume we're looking for. So how can we ramp that up and expand that to more patients?
I was just going to add, actually, because I think we're talking about scaling different models, being able to treat more patients. If I just maybe bring the conversation a bit back over to the process itself, one thing that I think is important that a lot of people wish they would have done when they look back, and that's when you're doing your process, when you're establishing your process, and when you're initially treating those first few patients, do yourself a favor and keep the retention samples. This is a piece of advice I give all the time because this allows you to not only do characterization, and really be able to dive deep into those cells and that and the output of your process. But it also allows you to be able to establish your comparability strategy when you eventually need to scale, to change, and to move your process. So just bringing it back over to the process itself and just some of these, I think, tricks of the trade. I think we as an industry are at a fantastic point where these therapies, regardless of where you manufacture them, what indication you're going after, what cell type, we're treating more and more patients. And when you raise the tide for all, everyone benefits. And this is something that I want to make sure we all owe that to the industry and to the patients that are counting on us to get this right. So let's make sure we get these processes and get more and more successes out there and then ultimately be able to treat more patients.
Yeah, this is ultimately all about the patients.
Kevin, Dallara, and Becky, I want to thank you all so much for joining us for this podcast today.
That's it for The Top Line. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercepharma.com. Look for podcasts. And that's The Bottom Line from The Top Line.